The Drum Corps History Podcast, Episode 62. The Drum Corps History Podcast, a deeper look into Drum Corps history. This week's episode, the Chicago Cavaliers. Welcome back to the Drum Corps History Podcast. My name is Ron Allard from Dice Man Radio. The following comes in part from an article written by Michael Boo for A History of Drum and Bugle Corps, Volume 2, published by Steve Vickers of Drum Corps World. The Cavaliers have long been one of Drum Corps' most illustrious units and have been under the leadership of one person, President Don Warren, since the Corps' founding in 1948. Long known as the Green Machine, the Corps has of late enjoyed a renaissance as one of the top corps in the world, a distinction it also enjoyed from the late 50s through the 1960s. As Warren Alm recounts, in the early days of the Cavaliers, the entire corps, uniforms, and instruments could fit on one bus, and an outing from Chicago to the Illinois State Fair in Springfield was considered a long trip. The corps originated as Boy Scout Troop 111 Drum and Bugle Corps, founded by 20-year-old Scoutmaster Warren after seeing the famed Racine Scouts perform at a Boy Scout Jamboree. About 30 boys joined the Parade Corps the inaugural year. Warren, barely older than many of the early members, expressed amazement that parents allowed him the responsibility for their sons, especially on road trips. Chuck McCurdy, bass horn player from 1955 from 1960, said, quote, "We took all the crime out of the streets and put it on buses and carried it around the United States," unquote. The Corps wore a traditional khaki uniform adorned with shoulder braids and other enhancements and was largely instructed by private lesson teachers from a local music store. The next year, the Thaddeus Kosciuszko American Legion Post of Logan Square, Chicago Northwest Side Polish neighborhood, became the Corps' first sponsor, and the name was changed to the Kosciuszko Post No. 712 Drum and Bugle Corps, shortened by many to COS 712. The sponsorship allowed the Corps to purchase new uniforms. There was much available in military surplus stores with the recent end of World War II. Army-issued dress pants and shirts dyed a dark midnight blue by the Corps made for a low-budget uniform. The pants and shirts were 100% heavy-duty wool, the shirts sealed with button cuffs and pants sealed by puttees, gaiters that covered the lower leg. Gold and white trim gave the uniform a spiffy look. In 1950, COS 712 got quote-unquote new uniforms, which were cast-off from downtown Chicago's General George Bell Post Corps. The Bell Corps was a national contender, placing second to St. Vincent's Cadets with a horn line of 18, a normal-sized line at the time. There was a tight camaraderie between the members of the staff of Bell and the upstart COS 712. Logan Square was connected to downtown by a quick mass transit ride, so members of COS 712 often watched the Bell Corps rehearse. Two troop members of COS 712 belonged to both corps and occasionally couldn't march a parade due to previous commitments with Bell. This led Warren to check out the more advanced unit, and as a result, COS 712's first instructors with drum corps experience came from Bell, Johnny Line and Art Kariskas, a VFW National Soprano Champion. Bell's corps' old uniforms were Eisenhower jackets with shakos and plumes, even hotter than the previous uniforms due to the ties that went with the long-sleeved dress shirts. The relatively cool satin blouses the Bell Corps bought had an influence on Warren. The electric blue blouses had a loose fit and open collar, were comfortable, and shimmered under the lights. COS 712 learned its first field show in 1950 and desired a new name with flair. Many area corps were simply referred to by their city or neighborhood, Logan Square, which later became Mel Tierney, Norwood Park, later to be known as the Imperials, Aurora, and Lincoln Fullerton. Others were known by their sponsorship, Gladstone, George Bell, and Commonwealth Edison. The crosstown Austin Grenadiers influenced the members of Cos 712 by being flashy, playing recognizable music, and having a name that created an image. About that time, Cavalier cigarettes were introduced with much fanfare. The name conjured up a swashbuckling image that appealed to Cos 712, and the Corps became known as the Chicago Cavaliers. The Corps even adopted the cigarette's logo, a cavalier with plumed hat, sword, and cape. The Standing Man logo found its way onto the bass drum heads and Corps stationery and can be seen today on just about everything associated with the Corps. The Chicago Cavaliers built up its treasury from parade appearance fees, contests, and other performances in 1950, enough so that the Corps was able to purchase new uniforms in 1951, inspired by those of the Bell Corps. The Corps was to wear black pants and shakos with big silver buckle on the white belts and satin blouses of an undetermined color. Dye makers had introduced a wide variety of vibrant new colors. Members of the Corps gravitated to an electrifying color that looked especially sharp on satin sports jackets, a pulsating yellow-green known as chartreuse. That's right, the green machine was almost the chartreuse machine. After figuring out minute uniform details, a full-color drawing was produced by the Corps' resident artist, drum major Harvey Fiedler. Marcus Rubin, the Corps' uniform maker, came out to view the sketches of the final selection and to take measurements. He took one look at the choice of colors and deflated the egos of the members, saying something like, quote, "Boys, you'll look real sharp in chartreuse, but these new colors haven't tested out yet, and I guarantee you that one summer out marching around under the sun will fade that color into insignificance," unquote. The members sat dejected in silence. Rubin spoke up, telling him that he had a Kelly green that looked great on satin, would take the dye well, and wouldn't fade. Fiedler redid the sketches in the new color, and all agreed the uniform looked great. Thus, the Cavaliers became green. Within a year, the chartreuse sports coats had faded to a pale pastel green. With the Corps' fourth uniform change in 4 years, the Chicago Cavaliers put on the green satin blouses for the first time in the spring of 1951. Local rivals, the Grenadiers and Norwood Park, had successful seasons, the latter Corps placing fourth at American Legion Nationals. By 1952, the Cavaliers had a reputation as an up-and-coming unit, one that hadn't beaten anybody of significance, but looked good in the process. Somewhere Over the Rainbow first made it into the repertoire. The Corps entered 1952 with a cocky attitude that would define its existence. Members thought they would knock off rivals left and right, but they did not yet have the experience to be one of the big players. South Milwaukee's Spectacle of Music was a huge early season event. So many Corps attended that there were three classes, Senior, Junior A, and Junior B. The experienced junior corps like Norwood Park, Grenadiers, Racine Scouts, Bell Corps, and the show winner Mel Tierney were in A. The less experienced corps, like the Cavaliers, Madison Scouts, Kilties, and the defending Cedar Rapids Cadets, were in B. The Cavaliers won its class and went the rest of the season placing third behind the Grenadiers in Norwood Park and fourth when Mel Tierney entered the picture. Members were depressed and spoke of not going to American Legion Nationals in New York. But after beating the Grenadiers at the Iowa State Fair, the Corps was revitalized with a newly found confidence and placed seventh at the American Legion Nationals, the highest of any Midwest Corps. The 1953 season showed the Chicago Cavaliers were for real as the Corps won its first American Legion state championship and placed eighth at American Legion Nationals. Sal Ferrara took over the horn line while still marching as a drummer, commencing his illustrious career as a brass arranger and technician. He also instilled in the Corps a determination to excel, stating, "Drum Corps is crazy unless you win." Despite winning its second state Legion title in 1954, the Corps dropped to 10th at the Legion Nationals due to the drum line being unable to compete with Eastern drum lines. That changed in 1955 when Frank Arsenault moved to Chicago. He earned a number of rudimental national championship soloist honors and was regarded as the greatest rudimental drummer of the day. Arsenault contacted Warren one day and made himself available to the Corps for the extreme sum of $10 a night, at a time when instructors were still volunteers. Warren didn't know how he would come up with the money, but he knew he had to try. Arsenault revolutionized the Corps' drumming technique and introduced the East Coast high sticking style. The drum line helped the Corps win its first VFW state title and placed fifth at American Legion Nationals. In 1956, the Corps won 16 of 20 contests, was the number one Corps in the Midwest, and took prelims over St. Vincent's at the VFW Nationals. A third place in finals brought the members back to reality. In 1957, the Corps won both state titles and won the VFW Nationals, breaking the Eastern stranglehold. Though some thought it a fluke, the balance of power was shifting toward the Midwest. In 1959, despite regaining the VFW national title, many titles were lost. The Corps was struggling financially, and Chicago's own VFW and American Legion Post, the two sponsors, were both pressed to provide adequate financial support. The outlook became gloomier when the state of Illinois banned bingo and other such fundraising activities for nonprofit groups. Members took matters into their own hands with Family Fun Night, a number of money-making opportunities that included the opportunity to hit Warren in the face with a pie for a dollar. Although the Corps didn't win a national title, it did win 17 of 21 shows. The Chicago Cavaliers also enjoyed having their own rehearsal space on the second floor above a cocktail lounge owned by Sal Ferrara's father, customized with soundproof rooms and regarded as the first ever Corps Hall. In 1961, the Corps was comprised largely of seasoned veterans. Horn arranger Ferrara selected the Desert Song as the theme for the music. Len Pekarsky designed the drill, which earned high scores in the marching and maneuvering and general effects captions. Rick Wozniak came on board as assistant quartermaster and founded the Boo Party, an annual event for members that is still held at the end of each season. The Corps, still based in Logan Square, started its long gravitation to the northwest suburbs when VFW Post No. 3579 in Park Ridge became a sponsor, taking over from Chicago's own post. The Cavaliers enjoyed an undefeated season, winning all 21 shows and topping Blessed Sacrament, St. Kevin's Emerald Knights, and Garfield at the VFW Nationals. Larry McCormick, a former marching member, became a drum instructor in 1962, helping to ensure a championship-caliber drum line for the rest of the decade. Another VFW national championship capped the season of 22 wins and 4 losses. In 1963, members were coming from as far away as Rockford, Illinois and Milwaukee, Wisconsin. The age of the neighborhood corps was past. The Spanish fanfare opener Bully became another corps trademark. The Cavaliers won 19 of 24 shows and another VFW national championship, the fifth in 7 years. At a time when the Chicago area was ascending in dominance, many national finalists from the area were now pushing the Corps for regional supremacy. Contrabasses were added in 1964, a season of 22-6. The Corps ended 1964 with a 101-20 record for the first 5 seasons of the 60s, with 3 national titles and the longest undefeated streak of 23 months in modern drum corps history. Mellophones were introduced in 1965, put to use during a return of Bully in the popular Land of a Thousand Dances. The Corps could only pull off a 13-8 record for the season, largely due to other local corps being national contenders. Competition was fierce leading into VFW Nationals in Chicago. When a severe rainstorm flooded Soldier Field, the finals competition moved indoors to the booming McCormick Place Convention Center. The Chicago Royal Airs captured the title with a swinging jazz show written and instructed by Truman Crawford. 1966, the Cavaliers would have won the VFW Nationals, but they lost the show on a one-point American flag penalty for a violation written into the show that was not noticed until VFW prelims. Though corrected before finals, the marcher responsible forgot, and it was caught in finals by Judge Earl Joyce, who earlier had marched with and taught the Corps. The Corps lost to the Troopers, then went to the American Legion National Championships a week later and beat the Troopers by almost 5 points. Drums dominated the competition. In an era when Corps were expected to repeat popular tunes from the past, Bully and Land of a Thousand Dances returned as part of the repertoire, as did the ever-present Somewhere Over the Rainbow. After 18 years, Rainbow was retired in 1967. The Corps' headquarters burned to the ground during the competition season, incinerating all uniforms and trophies in a fire that started somewhere else in the building. Despite the fire, the season was a success, with the Corps amassing a record of 24-2 and winning both the VFW and American Legion national titles. A large number of former marching members were now instructors. Paul Littow became an assistant marching instructor after working with the Color Guard. He shortly became a sought-after consultant. Bob Hone, later to work in management of Spirit of Atlanta, was joined by a long list of former marching members, including Adolph DeGrawi, eventually the Corps' director. Another of the former marching members who became an instructor was McCormick. In a few years, he would open McCormick's Enterprises for Everything Marching and would be the first to introduce a complete line of marching instructional videos. The Corps bounced back in 1969 with 50% new members and an 18-7 record, winning both the American Legion National and VFW titles. The 1970s were changing times in Drum Corps, and other corps adapted more easily to the new world order. The West Coast was making inroads much as the Midwest had done years before. Santa Clara Vanguard was still unknown to many. After beating the Cavaliers, its members left a wrapped present for the Boys in Green, a noose with which the corps was to hang itself. This little act of one-upmanship would not be forgotten. At VFW Nationals, the Corps came in third to the Troopers after being dumped to 11th place in prelims. Warren regards the inconsistencies exhibited at that show as the inspiration for the 71 Midwest Combine. McCormick rose to influence as a Corps program coordinator with ideas for reestablishing the Corps' identity as an innovator. Those ideas would run into established convention of the service organizations that ran the big national shows. On the surface, the 1971 production was a typical non-theme show comprised of a number of selections that had little, if anything, in common with one another. Music included A Salute to the Green, a series of Irish tunes, America's We, Eleanor Rigby, The Greatest Show on Earth, and a jazzy Somewhere Over the Rainbow. The guard danced an Irish jig, but dance was not yet an accepted drum corps idiom. There was running in the flag presentation in lieu of military bearing, straight ahead marching, and then there was the circus. That was beyond radical for the day. How could a proud traditional corps put a ringmaster, an acrobat, and a clown on the field? It was sacrilege. The circus segment of the show was a small part of the overall repertoire, but the entire presentation became known as the circus show. Popular t-shirts claimed that drum corps died in 1971, and the Cavaliers were the corps that drove the stake through the heart. Corps won 5 of the first 6 combine shows. The noose was returned to SCV, but it would soon be returned to the reigning clowns of the activity. After the Midwest Combine Tour, the Corps went east and never placed lower than 4th. But in Boston, the Corps heard something it hadn't heard for years. In 8th place, the Cavaliers. Throughout the East, the men in green were turned upside down and inside out. After being a dominant force in the activity since the 50s, a new day was dawning, and instead of being the driver, the Cavaliers became unwilling passengers. From then to the end of the season, the Corps performed for pride and fun. Then things hit rock bottom at the American Legion Nationals. All the other top Nationals attending Corps were at the big VFW show in Dallas, leaving only the Cavaliers to cakewalk over the Argonne Rebels, who the Corps had beaten earlier by 11 points. But Argonne won the show. Things had changed in the judging criteria, and despite being at the forefront of the ongoing structural changes in the activity, the Corps hadn't noticed some of the changes. In the past, corps such as the Cavaliers and the Troopers could muscle their way to the top on execution scores alone. Now, increased points were awarded to general effect and content was introduced into the process. The judges just didn't accept the corps' circus show as being GE. The Madison Scouts were performing another costume show that year, Alice in Wonderland. Scouts former director Bill Howard remembers that at the 1971 VFW Nationals in Dallas, Tony Schlechta, head of the VFW, got up at the manager's meeting and announced that costumes would be penalized 2 points each. The directors in attendance decided it was time for the corps to take control of their own destiny. The two regional organizations demonstrated that corps could unite in a single goal. Drum Corps International was the natural extension of this idea. We're out of time for now, so please join us again next week as we continue with a history of the Chicago Cavaliers. This podcast is produced and sponsored by DiceManRadio.com.